Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye and Wis Politics. Look at this week. Let's give Wis I Was There the week off, okay?
Okay.
Let's go. Just go right into the biggest news today. Governor-elect Evers, not today, but this week, Governor-elect Evers picked his first four cabinet secretaries. Mm-hmm. Let's quickly take a look at who he announced. Joel Brennan will be the Secretary of the Department of Administration. He's been the Discovery World CEO since 2007. Preston Cole will be the Secretary of the Department of Natural Resources. He's now on the DNR board, and he's the City of Milwaukee Commissioner of Neighborhood Services. Sarah Meany, now the Chief Marketing and Development Officer of Milwaukee Film, will be the Secretary of the Department of Tourism. And Mr. Kevin Carr, U.S. Marshal, former veteran of the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Department, will be the Secretary of Corrections. Four Milwaukee appointments, J.R., that drew some immediate flack. Your assessment?
Well, let's pull back a little bit. The Republican complaint is that you're focusing on Milwaukee. It's all about Milwaukee and Madison with Evers. These are just the first four. We're getting more coming in. There will be more. They will come from across the state. But for Republicans, they want to reinforce the idea that the Democratic Party is somehow shrunk down to just these two power bases of Madison and Milwaukee, and they're beholden to them. Here's the thing, though. Milwaukee is the biggest economy in the state.
Yeah.
There's an old saying that as Milwaukee goes, so does Wisconsin. Milwaukee doesn't do well, the state doesn't do well. So there are some reasons for Milwaukee being a big piece of what's going on. Now, let's look at the DOA secretary just to start. You need somebody in that position who knows government and can work with the business community. Joel Brennan knows government and can work with the business community. That's part of why he was picked. Every DOA secretary I've known, you don't know how good he or she will be until they're put to the test.
Mm-hmm.
I was just talking to somebody earlier, said the test is going to be joint finance. You know, that first hearing when you had your feet put to the fire by a Republican-controlled committee to see how well you defend the Evers budget and how you answer their questions. Remember Mark Murata?
I do.
Back in 2003?
Yep, the late Mr. Murata.
We didn't know what he was going to be like as DOA secretary, but in that hearing, he definitely answered questions from the committee. He pushed back when he needed to, and he won good marks out of that. So while we're watching Joel, how does he perform in the same capacity when it's time for joint finance?
But he was a campaign advisor to Mayor Barrett when he ran in 2002. That was a long time ago.
Also for his 2004 mayoral election.
That's true. But Joel Brennan has no institutional knowledge of state government, which is much bigger than Discovery World, even the City of Milwaukee budget. Mm-hmm. So he's got a, you think he has a steep learning curve?
Well, it depends. I mean, don't forget, these secretaries are just one of a one piece of the management team. You'll have a deputy secretary. You'll have an assistant to the deputy secretary. You should be able to executive assistants, but like the number three position.
Yeah.
So who fills those jobs? I mean, to really assess the team that Evers puts together, you need to see those spots as well. I mean, Scott Neitzel, no offense to Mr. Neitzel, but what experience did he have in government before he came over to be Walker's DOA secretary?
He was a Madison utility executive, then he was on the PSC, then he became DOA secretary.
So, but had he been deep in the bowels of, like,
no.
an agency?
No.
So, again, it's who, what's the tone and who are the people beneath the secretary that, to me, you got to kind of see to assess the team.
I'm intrigued by Mr. Cole. He now serves on the DNR board. He told reporters that, hey, I was trained in college as a professional forester. Sarah Meany, now let's talk about that, because Representative Travis Tranel and others in the assembly asked that Stephanie Klett keep her job. No surprise that Mr. Evers is bringing in his own tourism secretary?
No. I mean, you know, no offense to Stephanie Klett, but what's the connection to Tony Evers? I mean, this is the Evers administration, and I get the push to have some kind of bipartisan feel to it, but this is not holding over Walker people. And again, Stephanie Klett's been praised by both sides of the aisle as a cheerleader for the state of Wisconsin, okay? But what's her connection to Evers? How does she carry out the Evers message? And if you're Evers, you want your message being sung by the people in your cabinet. So where is that connection there? So I'm not surprised at all that he brought in his own person at tourism.
I think the one, Mr. Brennan's going to have a lot to do running what used to be called the Department of All Administration. But I think Mr. Carr, when you look at the issues in corrections, Lincoln Hills, mm-hmm. overcrowding, do we need a new prison? Green Bay and Waupun were built in the 1900s. I mean, he's got a pretty amazing job ahead of him.
And don't forget, Evers has said he wants to reduce the prison population. How is that going to work?
Reform, stressing rehab.
How can he get to some agreement with the Republican-led legislature? Let's go back to the DNR Secretary for a second. In talking to people about these picks initially, we've all heard names floated for DNR Secretary. I mean, Spencer Black, former state lawmaker from Madison, Fred Clark, another former state lawmaker, Kathy Falk, Dane County Executive, who was a public intervener for DOJ.
Right.
The pick is somebody who was on the DNR board, who was, I believe, reappointed by Scott Walker, a Doyle appointee reappointed by Walker. Walker praised him. Think of the symbolism of that person at the DNR Secretary versus somebody who is more progressive maybe on an environmental front. What message does this send? And is it a reassuring one of we're going to, in his words, rely on science, but we're not going to be, you know, the Evers administration, this all public intervener type, you know, approach at DNR, more of a moderate approach, which Tony Evers seems to be more of a moderate Democrat, right?
Yeah.
So maybe is that sending a message about what kind of administration he's going to have? And the approach to government.
All right, time to listen to Governor-elect Evers talking about his four first cabinet appointments and then the thoughts on Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, who said, I only know one of them, Joel Brennan. It's going to be a very interesting budget process. Let's hear from both of those gentlemen.
I'm seeking talent, and I'm seeking people that can connect the dots and people that will work with the civil servants and others and their agencies to provide the best services possible, and to have a cabinet that looks like the people of Wisconsin. And we have a great start here. These are extremely talented people, great problem solvers. They're going to be able to connect the dots. We're going to solve issues for the people of Wisconsin.
It's just going to be a different type of budget that I think will be introduced in hopefully mid-February, late February at the latest. And it's going to take Wisconsin in a different direction, and I think that's what a lot of the Republican legislators are concerned about. Like I said, I know Joel Brennan. I did not know anyone else that's been named so far, so look forward to sitting down and talking to any of the nominees. And I advised Chief of Staff and the Governor-elect. I said, you know, after doing this for 12 years, the one thing that's essential is to make sure that any of those that are nominated, make sure they get to each and every office and sit down with the senators.
I want to read the exact quote from Speaker Voss in reaction to these four appointments, JR. I'm so greatly disappointed that his top four appointments were from Milwaukee. Even more disconcerting is that the most powerful appointment was a brother-in-law of the co-chair of his transition team. Now let's connect those dots. Joel Brennan is a brother-in-law of Kevin Conroy, mm-hmm. who's the co-director of the transition team.
Co-chair.
Co-chair. Thanks very much. And he runs Exact Sciences in Madison, mm-hmm. which is a growing medical device firm. Why the snarky Voss comment?
He also made a comment that he was disappointed that these people all seem to lack government experience, which in talking to some Democrats, were like, well, wait a second. They thought the Republican Party was a party of the private sector. So what's wrong with people coming from the private sector to run government when that's what Republicans seem to want? The other thing interesting, and you know, don't get too deep into this, but there are lots of people in the Capitol who have personal connections to other people in politics. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure if you are a lawmaker or anybody in a position of power in Madison that you want to start peeling your own onion about the layers of personal connections you have to others in politics. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, Robin Voss is trying to elevate himself to be the conservative voice who is the one pushing back against Evers. How's the relationship going to work? But we're seeing early on that he wants to be the one quoted, sought out, the, I don't say equal, but, you know, leading an co-equal branch of government to Tony Evers, and he's going to be in this role. So we'll see how he does as the attack dog.
And Mr. Evers has said he hopes to have a full cabinet by Christmas, which is next Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So you expect him to roll out some additional appointments here mm-hmm. very, very soon?
Yeah, I thought it was or by, you know, Inauguration Day, something like that. But yeah, he'll get something done. I mean, he's well in the window of being, you know, kind of normal.
Right.
2010 Governor Walker unveiled everybody December 30th, 2002. Durrell began rolling out in waves December 5th, somewhere around there, had another couple of weeks after, another few of the week after, more in January, last one, May of 2003. So Evers has got plenty of time to get his full cabinet in
if
place.
If I was wrong on Christmas Day, certainly by Inauguration Day, January 7th. Okay. A week ago, we talked about how we expected Governor Walker to tweak the lame duck bills. He signed them all intact a few hours after we taped the show. But one of those provisions limited early or absentee voting to 2 weeks before the election. Well, a record 565,591 absentee or early voting votes were cast before November 6th. And so the groups that had won a 2016 judge's ruling striking down limits on early voting were back in court, back in federal court this week. Now, we don't have a decision from the judge in terms of whether, I think it's Judge Peterson, whether he's going to accept this reopening of the suit.
Yep. So it's interesting. They're trying to go back to the same judge who issued the injunction on
James
the first
Peterson.
Law.
Yeah.
This is a new law, replaces the other one. Now, what's been interesting to watch is the original law that Republicans passed that was put basically put on hold by Judge Peterson, limited to 2 weeks, much like this one, but it went further. It said no Sundays, limited number of hours you could offer it, the polling sites, just one per community, and some other requirements. This one is different.
And but the provisions you just listed, he threw out. Thank you. Just to clarify.
This one, it's 24-7, no limit on the polling places. So the hope of Republicans is this addresses the concerns that Peterson raised. Now, currently, because of the Peterson decision, the only restriction on absentee voting and early person voting is the ballots are ready. Under state law, they must be ready 47 days out from an election because of military and overseas voters. So you have a 47-day window, in theory, you can offer it. Now, I don't think anybody goes a full 47, a couple get close. If this withstands scrutiny, places like Madison and Milwaukee, which have, you know, significant number of people do it.
They have the resources.
We'll have a compressed window.
Long
compressed
hours.
Window. So where are they going to do it? How often? How do you adjust to this restriction? I'm never going to predict what a judge is going to do. And I've read some conservatives saying that, you know, this is a flawed argument that because they've done these changes, this should pass constitutional muster. We shall see. I really don't know what's going to happen. But it is clear, looking at what happened election day or ahead of election day, this option has become part of the election experience and voters like it.
Yes.
Milwaukee County was number one. Dane County number two, Waukesha County number three.
One in five votes, November 6th, were earlier absentee.
So, and, you know, the pushback from Democrats has been, as much Republicans talk about standardizing the days to make it fair, why aren't they pushing the local clerks in Republican areas to extend the hours that they are, the days that they offer it, versus restricting what Madison and Milwaukee do?
1 week after the governor signed without any vetoes these lame duck bills, are you hearing that there could be or there will be other lawsuits, or is this probably going to be the only one growing out of the lame duck agenda?
Oh, I'm sure people are going to kick the tires and go into court. You know, there's some things with the attorney general that there may be some separation of powers issues, but again, I'm not an attorney, so I hate to predict how that plays out, but I would be surprised if there's some more stuff coming.
Okay, new subject. The Blue Ribbon Commission on School Funding met for the final time this week, and let's go back. I remember Speaker Voss saying, I really want to take the recommendations of this panel seriously. And they went all over the state. They included local, Representative Kitchens and Senator Olson were the co-chairs. So they did travel extensively. But then you had the election, and the election not only of a Democrat, but the superintendent of public instruction. So at his La Crosse budget listening session, when he met with reporters, he said, I'm going to take the lead on this in the budget. And remember, he's got this fair funding that we'll probably see again in the budget. So the takeaway from the Blue Ribbon Commission is a consensus emerged for more support for special ed, bilingual programs, and low-income students, and some other provisions that you listed in your newsletter, I think, yesterday. Do you want to highlight any of those?
No. Look, let's pull back a second and talk about this. We've been around for a long time.
Yep.
How many blue ribbons have you seen on the school funding formula?
Many.
How many of them have actually produced anything?
Let's talk about that. If you're going to redo the school funding formula, you got to have enough money so everybody's a winner. And that's very uncertain. However, Mr. Evers said, in the next budget, I'm going to ask for an additional $1.4 billion. Mm-hmm. Including what, $600 million for special ed?
Special ed, get to two-thirds funding, some other things.
Yes.
Reason I ask that question is lot of issues in the Capitol break along partisan lines. And when they do, there's an easy answer. If this party has power, that party can get it done. This issue crosses party lines and crosses regional lines. Every lawmaker, more likely, I won't say, well, maybe not every, but vast majority, will have winners and losers if the formula changes. And by winners, I mean they get more money. Losers, they get less money.
Yep.
So how do you address that? Because it's going to make everybody nervous about a vote. It is difficult. And then, oh, by the way, if you put a formula change before the legislature, then the people in power start to play with it, you know, to benefit their side. If
and you're governing by numbers and the printouts and the charts. What does it do to my district? Okay, we don't win as much as XYZ district. I'm against it. Tweak it. Fix it.
In the Act 10 debate, when Walker cut back on school funding and then was going to backfill it basically with the requiring teachers to pay more for their health care and their other stuff, I remember that debate was, oh, wait, when these newbies get their rollout, their printouts
their
of their districts, it'll freak them out.
Yeah.
To Republicans' credit, you know, they held firm on that and didn't bow that pressure. But that's the thing. When you see what happens at home, what do you do? So I don't know if they'll ever have enough money to really overhaul the funding formula. And the question that I kind of have is, well, who does it well? It seems like everybody has an issue with the school funding formula. So why can't they find a solution? That's why I cover politics, Steve. I'm not in politics.
Yes. And it's time for a 30-second clip. Senator Olson is very subdued, and he talks about thanks for all the work that we did. He's one of the co-chairs of this Blue Ribbon Commission, and he says we've got to keep fighting. But notice the subdued tone in Senator Olson's voice. Please roll that.
This is probably the most comprehensive listening and thinking that we've done on education in our state in a long time. And I think we have some very good things. We can all be proud of these documents. And the next goal is to work together and with our colleagues around the state to get this stuff into law. Because the thing that would break our hearts is this stuff doesn't go anywhere, isn't it? Sits on a shelf and gathers dust.
Sharice Daniels hoped to run in Assembly District 37 last fall. But she withdrew after an investigation of the signatures on her nomination papers. And she just agreed to plead guilty to a felony.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a long time. Have you ever heard of someone pleading guilty to a felony for involving names on your nomination papers?
No. I remember Gary George getting booted off the ballot in 2002, was it?
Around there, yep.
After there was an investigation of his signatures and found some problems. But this is a very interesting case where you have a candidate in a strongly Republican seat.
Representative Jaglers.
Who was profiled on CNN as part of the surge of female candidates in light of President Trump.
Yes.
Goes out there, circulates nomination papers, turns them in, and the Republican Assembly Campaign Committee goes, wait a second, there's some problems here. Identified the problems, filed a complaint with the Elections Commission. The Watertown Police Department opens up the investigation and finds all these problems, and now she's facing a felony. And talking to this Brussels prosecutor this week, he explained the plea deal, because there's no jail time involved. I believe total fines around $500 or so, he told me. She has no prior criminal history, other than like some minor traffic offenses.
Yes.
She took responsibility. She agreed to plead guilty.
Cooperated with investigators.
She's pregnant. She has small children. She's working. All these mitigating factors, he said, this doesn't deserve jail time. At the same time, it's a felony. You know, this is an issue where she forged signatures on nomination papers. And I talked to people about it, like, look, we get it. There's pressure to get things done. But getting signatures is a basic function of running a candidate. Like, need to know it's wrong to go out and not do it the right way. And if you talk to some folks who went over papers, like there was an intentional way in which she did it to, you know, kind of go line by line with these signatures. So it's just an unfortunate thing to have happen, but it also sent a message to people about what happens when you do this.
Bottom line, probation for a year and payment of fines and other costs of about $500.
Yep.
Okay, before we get to stock picks, you and I just saw a press release from the governor's office. The surplus at the end of last fiscal year was $588 million.
Mm-hmm.
That was up from earlier estimates?
No, so in November we got the kind of the summary of everything that was requested by state agencies, the revenue projection, and the closing balance for 17-18. So it matches that number.
Okay.
This is another kind of called the CAFR report, the Comprehensive Annual Fiscal Report.
Yeah.
So it's the same number that we saw in November. But for Walker, this is part of a kind of a victory lap to keep reminding people of how things are going
right.
as he leaves office.
And we also saw the Department of Revenue tax collections, August, September, October, November, first 4 months of this fiscal year, up 6.7%.
Which is also what we saw in the November report. That's right. Why they're kind of optimistic in the next 2 years. Now,
right.
all this is happening in the backdrop of what's going on with the market right now, and is a recession coming? If a recession comes, all these positive numbers go away.
Yeah, and we don't want to look at what's happening on the market right now. We want to talk about your stock report rising.
So taxpayers, I got a report out this week that the state and local tax burden is down to 10.5%.
10.5%. You're talking about the Wisconsin Policy Forum report.
Thank you.
Lowest in 5 decades.
50 years.
Yeah.
Down a tenth of a point. Look, this is another piece of that victory lap for Walker. You know, the ending balance, we had unemployment out this week that is, you know, below 3% for 10 solid months now.
Yeah.
So Republicans are touting this as, you know, good news, almost ruefully, because Governor Walker is now going to be gone. The questions going forward are, what might they do during the election? Tony Evers talked about cutting middle income
tax cut.
About 10%.
10%.
See how that plays out, Fitzgerald.
And in La Crosse, he told reporters, I also think we can pull off the next budget without raising property taxes on homes. I hadn't heard him say that before, but excuse me,
We'll see. That's okay. I'll go fire ahead. Scott Fitzgerald said this week during availability that, you know, he wants to work with Evers about this. Now, one of the hidden things about taxes, though, you got to remember, is we as Wisconsinites have been voting to raise our property taxes. Not everybody, but a lot of communities lately.
Referendums,
wheel taxes,
referendums. And wheel tax.
Which is part of why Evers won, because there is, and why Walker tried to put so much money into schools in the last budget, because he realized there was a vulnerability there. People, yeah, it's great your property tax bill is low,
yeah,
but they saw a need to put resources into their schools, and that's part of what drove that issue in the campaign.
Right. So, and we're talking here, 10.5%, which, as you said, is a drop of 0.1%
mm-hmm.
in the amount that state and local taxes take of your income.
Yeah.
So, okay. Policy Forum report. Mixed.
Paul Ryan. So we had the farewell address this week, and it kind of brought up the Ryan legacy. And what is that going to be? Well, on the one hand, you have a guy who was the ideas guy for Republican Party, or build that, for 2 decades. He also got a handful of bills signed into law in 20 years in Congress. He's the architect, in many ways, of the tax package they did last year.
The one that boosts the deficit?
Well, because he talked for years about taxes and entitlement reform. They didn't do part two. Because he didn't do part two, well, now you've got this exploding deficit in his 3 years as Speaker. And somebody who called out for civility, but he only stepped to Trump during the campaign. Then once Trump won, he kind of made a deal with the devil to get along and keep his concerns to himself, to get taxes done, try to get other things done. And then he's only occasionally popped up to say, well, that's too much, the president. So it's kind of like this weird juxtaposition of where what he aspired to and what he has been.
Well, I was struck. You have the Speaker of the U.S. House, third in line for the presidency, saying, number one, our politics is broken. Number two, I do not know how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So he left a couple of big things like immigration, including border security in there, talked about civility. He talked about you need for entitlement reform. I mean, there are problems left behind. And in the end, you know, Ryan, he really did a good job, if you look at his career, of being that good spokesperson for the cause about the ideas. And there are a lot of forums that had him come talk to him in the breakfast circuit in Washington, D.C. and those kinds of things. He was great on that. But what'd they get done? And what will be the record? It takes time to figure out the record for a lot of these people when they leave office.
Right.
But I think as he walks out the door with this whole shutdown, you know, like high drama, the closing days, what's going on? Why couldn't he push that caucus around more? Granted, he was the reluctant speaker, but he really didn't crack kneecaps when it came to that Republican caucus to get things done. And, you know, you see it in how things played out.
Right. And he also said that outrage is now a brand in that mm-hmm. speech. Okay. Falling.
Dairy farms. So look, we're the dairy state, but we've been losing dairy farms for a long time. I think it was a record percentage lost dairy farms this past year, down like around 8%. Like, there are a lot of things going into it. There's consolidation. There's an aging farm population. People are retiring.
Yep.
You know, so what do you do? We're still producing a whole lot of milk. All right?
Yes.
But 1935, it's not apples to apples because farms are much smaller then, but 1935, there were 180,000 plus dairy farms in Wisconsin. Now we're down to 8,000.
Right. And we lost 429 through September, a drop through September, I think, of 4%. Okay. Well, happy holidays to you and your family. You got your Christmas shopping done?
Almost.
Almost. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And that's Rewind for the week of December 17th. And look for our special year in review Rewind, top 10 stories, 5 honorable mentions, Friday, December 28th. Thank you.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.